75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show.
Just got back from Detroit, huh? You're back in Los Angeles?
Chrissy Blaze, you're a woman of many hats, and it's great to talk to you. You just got back from Detroit, huh? You're back in Los Angeles?
That's right. I'm back in Los Angeles.
Now, you left for Detroit on Friday. I don't know if you had a chance to see this Peter Jennings UFO show or not.
Oh, I did see half of it, actually. I saw the first half.
And then you fell asleep.
And then I had to fly off, but the first half was great, I thought.
Yeah, it was. It kind of fell apart on the second half when they started talking about the big thing was his basic statement that Roswell was a myth, and that was in the second half. And also, they kind of did a number on abductees at that point, basically showing, you know, shadow figures and things like that. But, you know, I really think, and you know the broadcasting business, I really think basically they were looking for dramatic, you know, visuals. And the common person out on the street probably is aware of these things for the first time, many of them. And so, as a matter of fact, that's one reason I want to do the show with you, because you have quite an experience background with the Sotheria Society, and we've done shows about that before, and it's been a while, so I thought we'd do one and bring everybody up to date. I can't believe that you go all the way back to 1957 and Dr. George King, do you?
Well, not me personally.
Okay, it's hard to say. You don't seem to be that old. I mean, that's my type of age.
But, I mean, I was alive then, don't get me wrong, but I was I would have been too young at the time. Without giving away my age, but certainly.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I'm not trying to do that.
But the society was founded in England in 1955, and Dr. King was well involved himself in that whole UFO cosmic connection from 1954 onwards, actually, until his passing in 1997.
He lived that long, huh?
Yeah, he lived a long time, and he was heavily involved in this whole movement for all those years, and, you know, he had a fantastic history and a fantastic mission, and...
Well, we're going to get into some of that here in a minute. I was just thinking about him first starting there in the UK. I've always thought about him out there in the desert with the high desert near Los Angeles.
Actually, he's a real northern Englishman, and very... very sort of pragmatic and practical, although he was an occultist and a contactee and all this kind of thing. He was very down-to-earth, too. Very, very down-to-earth northern Englishman.
He had a lot of things published over the years.
Yes, he had about 30 books and so on, and he had many, many tapes and so on. So, yes, lots of stuff published over the years.
And what are some of the things? Are some of those books still available? Or?
They're all still available, actually. He also had published these 600 messages which he received over those 40 years from intelligences from beyond this world. And this is something that we recorded at the time. They were recorded, and we have them. Some of them are in print. But we have them all available for posterity, actually.
Well, great. And on our website, we have a way where they can go shop for those and order some if they want them. Didn't he have something to do with the nuclear accident in Russia way back there? Didn't they have something happen in the 50s?
Oh, yeah. There was something happening in the 50s and also more recently in 1986, the Chernobyl, something really fantastic.
Yeah, I knew, and we'll talk about Chernobyl in a minute, but I'm not familiar with that first, in 58. I mean, that's the year I graduated from high school, so now you know how old I am. but I wasn't paying attention.
But you were a child protege, weren't you?
Yes, yes, I was.
Age of 4 or 5, you graduated.
Thank you very much. tell me a little bit about the 1958 thing, if you know anything about it. I mean, I guess it was an atomic accident at Windscale, or
there was one in Windscale. There's an even more fascinating one that took place in the Urals Mountains in Russia. But just to mention the one in Windscale in England, it was October the 29th, 1957. Dr. King received a contact from an extraterrestrial intelligence, and he was informed at that time the true extent of the danger that was posed by an atomic accident that took place in Windscale in the north of England on October the 10th that year, 1957. And it was being covered up by scientists from the Atomic Energy Authority and the Medical Research Council.
Yeah, the reason I mentioned Windscale instead of the Chernobyl thing and the earlier Russian thing in the Ural Mountains is because I didn't know anything about the English one.
Oh, really? Yeah. Apparently, the Prime Minister at the time, Harold Macmillan, if you remember him.
Yeah, I do. White-haired fellow.
And that there was no evidence that this accident at Windscale has done any significant harm to any person. Well, anyway, it was published at the time that he received this communication in the Aetherius Society Journal, which is called Cosmic Voice. It was published all the time, all the details about how serious it was. And it wasn't until 1988, under the Official Secrets Act, that full disclosure was made, and this led to a massive major outcry. I remember it actually, and large amounts of money were paid in compensation to the families of the many, many cancer victims, leukemia victims among the workers at Windscale. And it was also revealed at that time that in fact leukemia in people aged 25 and under living in that local community was 10 times higher than the national average. So, in fact, what Harold Macmillan said at the time was just a cover-up. And this was published, as I say, in 1957 by this extraterrestrial contact. So it was interesting that it took sort of almost 30 years later to be it fully disclosed to the public.
And we're talking about the Official Secrets Act in England. I think they have a 50-year lid or something.
I'm not sure that. I think it is about...
Yeah, right. And... I know you were talking to your friend Dr. Richard Lawrence about some of the new things they're exposing now, Richard Lawrence was actually involved, I guess. He's a member of the Aetherius Society too. So
He's the secretary of the European headquarters and international director as well, and he's been heavily involved actually. I remember I used to work with him in England for many, many years on sort of UFO cover-ups and so on. And he had a sort of almost weekly conversation with the UFO guy at the Ministry of Defense. And that was quite fascinating. But now under the Freedom of Information Act that I think since January this year in England, they have been releasing information. But typical that the really good cases aren't being released. I don't know. The ones they're releasing are kind of nothing very spectacular.
Yeah, the bureaucrats have a wonderful knack of being able to take these laws that are passed and subvert them. They do that in this country all the time with our freedom of information. They give you everything, but it's blacked out.
Don't you agree one of the most clever things that the government has done, and then they don't do many clever things, but one of the most clever things is not to sort of keep these UFOs a secret, because when things are kept secret, the public, we, want to know what it is, right? So what they do instead, they release it a certain amount, and then they say, well, this is of no interest to us, it's not very interesting, no threat to national security, and that's exactly what they're doing in England now. So it kind of takes the interest out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I'm interested in this contact that Dr. King had with the extraterrestrials. Was that literally, did they come down and visit him, or was it by some kind of thought wave, or what happened here? What was this contact about?
Well, it happened in 1954. He was you have to remember, he was an extraordinary man. He wasn't sort of an average person. He had trained for many, many years in yoga disciplines, and he was a fully realized master of the sort of occult sciences. He was also a psychic. He was a wonderful medium, a trance medium, and was able to go into a positive yogic trance, not some kind of negative trance where you can be taken over, not that kind of thing at all, but one in which he was fully in control of his faculties. And one day he was just washing the dishes in London, and in his flat in London, and he was contacted by a voice, but it was very, very clear. It wasn't in his head. It was a voice outside of himself that made this pronouncement, which will go down in history, I believe, 1954 in May. And it said, prepare yourself. You are to become the voice of Interplanetary Parliament, which is kind of, it sounded as strange to him at that time as it does to you and the people listening now. But being, as I say, a person who was very, very versed in metaphysics and so on, he went on a search to find out what this meant. And he went into deep meditation and was looking for answers. And he declared that he wasn't going to come out of this until he found the answer. And one day, about a week later, a well-known yogi who was alive in India at the time walked through his locked door and proceeded to explain to him what had happened. What?
Wait a minute. You mean he walked right through the door?
He walked through the locked door, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't open it or anything?
He didn't open it.
Yeah, okay.
Of course, these yogi masters, these adepts, they're able to dematerialize and rematerialize. And actually, there's a wonderful, to sort of go off the subject, there's a wonderful UFO story about that that happened not too long ago that was hardly made the newspapers. But I was on the phone to TASS at the time, and I got all the details about that. But anyway, that's another subject.
Well, yeah, but I want to hear it before it's over. You shouldn't have mentioned it to me.
It's an amazing thing, actually.
But let's go back to what we were talking about first, and then I'll get to this.
This famous, he's a famous at the time in India, alive in India at the time, walked through his locked door, and he was told that you are one, George King, was one of many, he was not the only one, who was called upon to prepare for the coming conflict between, if you like, materialism and spirituality, or however you like to call it, you know, and he was told to pray, be still, meditate, and open the doors of his heart and mind to the precious waters of truth. And information was given to him. So he was initiated by this adept into certain practices, and he was informed at the time that he would receive a letter, and that this letter would come from a school of yoga in London, in which he should attend and practice, you know, what they would teach him. Well, a letter did come out of the blue, and it invited him, as he was told it would, to attend these yoga classes, which he did, and he practiced many, many hours in exercise and pranayama and so on. And quite soon after all this initiation, all this practice, he was able to tune in and receive telepathically information which was relayed over millions of miles of ether, of space. And this was the beginning of his over 600 of these messages, which in the society we refer to as cosmic transmissions from extraterrestrial sources, which were our teachings, if you like.
Were you ever around him when he got one of these messages?
I was indeed, yeah. I came into the society in 1972 and met this very, very remarkable man and worked with him. I worked quite closely to him for over 25 years. So I was with him, yes, on a couple of occasions when he took these. As he got older,
Would he go into a room or someplace and meditate, or would they just hit him, the messages?
He would go into a room and go into a very high type of yogic trance condition, which is called a somatic trance condition, where he's fully aware. He doesn't kind of blank out. That's a kind of a negative trance. Not at all. He's fully aware and fully in control of all his mental and psychic faculties. And in that position, he was contacted telepathically through these contacts, which would then, it would be translated by his larynx into sound and then recorded. And these, in the early days, certainly they gave UFO predictions, they gave scientific predictions, all sorts of things like this.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, I guess this is how he got that Chernobyl warning. I mean, he was about 5 hours ahead of the actual event, if I recall.
That's right, yeah, you remember that. It was 5 hours, and Richard Lawrence was with him at the time, so, and it was recorded, and the Aetherius Society was told to sort of go into action, because we have these spiritual energy radiators, which Dr. King, apart from being a yoga master, was also a radionics scientist, and he invented this machinery which could send out to the world massive amounts of this, you might call it spiritual energy, you might call it prayer energy, which it's rather like giving healing to an individual. Instead of that, you're giving healing, which brings about balance and ease. Instead of that, through this machinery, you're able to give healing to a world situation like a war, an earthquake, and so on, and help to bring about balance in the area. So he was told to go into action, into emergency action at that time, with our machinery, which he did.
Did you ever see the machinery?
Oh, yes, I'm one of the people who operates it, actually. So,
well, what do you do? You push a button, or you have to pedal it up, or... I'm just curious how it works.
It works. It's really fantastic. We don't say exactly how it works.
Oh, it's a secret. Okay. Well, that's the reason I ask.
The thing that's secret is what it's made up of. For the reason for that is that anything that can be used for good can also be used for the opposite. So, but basically, it's a piece of radionic machinery which can send out massive amounts of energy. I've seen it. Not only have I seen it regularly, I've also felt the energy. It's very powerful. You can even burn yourself. It's very, very powerful, this concentrated spiritual power.
Is it located there in Los Angeles?
There is a machine in Los Angeles, indeed, one in London, other parts of the world, too.
Okay.
So we can sort of, in times of emergency, we really do go into action and work with the machines and send out this spiritual energy in conjunction with these terrestrial craft. You know, this is sounds kind of bizarre to people, but believe me, if you had been around Dr. King for many years, you would realize he really was a very unique individual, very much ahead of his time.
Who are these extraterrestrials? Do you have any idea?
Well, we teach and we believe very strongly that they do come from within this solar system as well as outside of it. Just as, you know, you think, well, we know that there's no life on Mars and that we know there's no life on Venus, etc., because we expect the life, number one, to be like us. But number two, you've got to think in terms of if you're a kind of a clairvoyant person, if you see dead people, in other words, you would know that around this Earth, there is life that we can't see with our physical eyes, you know. And it's just the same around the other planets. There is life that you can't necessarily see with your physical eyes, although they can take and do take on physical bodies when they visit this planet and other planets. And indeed, I believe that they are among us.
You mean living among us?
I believe that some of them are, yeah, and have always done for many, many thousands of years.
Is there any way we could recognize those people?
I think we recognize them often in retrospect. I believe that we teach in the Aetherius Society that great beings such as the Lord Buddha, Sri Krishna, Lao Tse, great beings, even Jesus, who have forwarded civilization through their teachings, through their message, have come from other planets, you know, to help us.
Well, so that's basically the reason these people are here. I mean, the ETs, and I use the term these people, but I mean, that's the reason the spirits are here?
Absolutely. They're here to help mankind.
I mean, is there an evil element to it, or is it all good?
Well, I suppose in other parts of the galaxy, indeed, there is evil. Of course, yeah, we can't deny that. But certainly in this solar system, this planet is regarded as the bottom of the classroom. And if you look at what's going on in this planet, it's not very hard to... If you're an honest person, I don't think it's very hard to disagree with that or to to agree with that. I'm sorry.
No, I don't disagree with it. I was just thinking if Dr. King were alive today, he'd be getting a lot of messages. I mean, things are in pretty bad shape.
But, you know, they started to come in earnest, well, obviously after the Kenneth Arnold thing in 1947, but they came in earnest in the 1950s. There were sightings everywhere, as you probably remember, Jerry.
Well, sure, 1952, there were more than any other time.
But, of course, you know, if you think about it, they came in the 50s because we were on the brink of nuclear war, weren't we? I mean, this is a very dangerous time for this planet. And one thing they don't want is for us to blow up the planet. Not, you know, to destroy us for one thing, but also the planet itself is a very holy goddess, if you like.
So that would be the message, at least one of the messages. I imagine, agape love and things like that are also important.
Imagine what is important?
Agape love, unrequited, uncommitted. Right.
I was speaking the other day to Edgar Mitchell. You know Edgar Mitchell?
Yes.
I met him at the field when we were speaking at the field conferences in London.
Uh-huh.
And he was a man I always wanted to meet because he was one of the Apollo 14 astronauts and went to the moon and all this. And I don't know if you know, Jerry, but he had this mystical experience when he was looking at the moon and the Earth.
Yes, I know a little bit about it. I've never interviewed Edgar Mitchell. Now, he was in Roswell last year while I was there. And we talked, but we didn't get a chance to do a radio interview.
Well, he's a fascinating man. He had this mystical experience when he looked at the Earth, and he had this kind of tremendous feeling. It was more than a feeling. It was a spiritual experience, is what he described it as, when he realized the oneness of humanity. He just, okay, we all know it, Jerry. We kind of, we know it, but he really realized it. You know, he could see the Earth from space, and he realized that what he had to do was to come back and find out what that spiritual experience really meant. So he studied through all the spiritual texts and the yoga disciplines and all these things, and founded actually his Institute of Noetic Sciences. But what he realized is that we have to learn, is exactly what you said, we have to learn to love each other. We are our brother's keeper, and all these old messages, there's nothing new in the teachings of the Aetherius Society either. I mean, things are put in a different way. There's a cosmic concept, yes, which is new, but the message itself, the teachings themselves are, you know, you are your brother's keeper. We have to, you know, love each other and so on.
You talk about this, and our listeners probably say, yeah, but they're also probably wondering, so what? What can I do to help out? I guess each little person, if they're all doing the same thing, it becomes quite a force.
Oh, absolutely. I never underestimate the power of one, you know, the power. Because if we look in history, isn't it true, Jerry, that every single major change that happened in history was always one person, actually, wasn't it? Whether it was Gandhi, and, you know, you may not be a Gandhi, people are listening, but there again, you can be, whether it was, whoever it was. It's always one person who starts it, right? So the power of one, is whether it's a George King, a Mother Teresa, or whoever, it's one person that really starts this change. And usually they're so far ahead of their time that usually during their lifetime they're not recognized, or they end up being like Martin Luther King, sort of assassinated or something, because they are ahead of their time. But the ripple effect of what they do, it just goes down through history, doesn't it?
Now we talked about the ETs a little bit here. I'm going to ask you the big question. I asked you where they're from, and you kind of said, well, they're from inside the solar system. I mean, can we be more specific?
They're planets of Mars, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury, all of them, do have advanced life forms on them, which is something I know that even people who really believe in the existence of life on other planets, they usually think outside of this solar system. But and certainly there is life. This universe is teeming with life, absolutely teeming. But Dr. King had messages from beings from planets within this solar system. And there are many, which I've heard, meant a number of them, a lot of them. and they have very different characteristics, very different types. And funny enough, it actually ties in quite well with astrology, because I'm an astrologer also. For example, in astrology, we learn that, you know, the influence of the planet Mars is very different from the influence of the planet Venus. And when you hear the messages from those beings, it's interesting that the difference ties in very well with these astrological sort of definitions.
I love your astrological newsletters, and we urge people to go over and check you out. We have banners on our websites. It goes straight to that part, and in addition to that, you know, then just go to chrissyblaze.com, that's ChrissyBlaze, and you're quite a woman, and I understand that we kid around about it, but you really are a minister, correct?
Yeah, I'm a minister in the Aetherius Church, have been since the 1980s.
And what does that involve?
It involves me conducting services, performing marriages, baptisms, funerals, the whole, you know.
So you're a recognized minister in the state of California?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I am indeed. I actually became a minister in London in the 1980s and have been serving as a minister ever since, yeah.
Now, you know, we talked to you many times, and I want to get to this UFO sighting of recent vintage here in a moment. I haven't forgotten about that, folks. But, yeah, we've talked to you many times, and remember when I was having trouble with my eyesight, we actually did a healing on the air. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, Chrissy, but I don't know for sure, but I did get better after that, okay?
Yeah, well, that often happens.
I mean, I can see a lot better now than I could then.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm so happy about that, really.
And you know, folks, I kid around with Reverend Blaze, but at the same time,
call me Chrissy.
you're a remarkable person.
Well, that's very sweet of you. Thank you so much. I mean, another thing Dr. King taught was that everybody is a healer. And he came in the 1970s, I have to say, 1975, he published his book. And I was in England at the time, and I've always been involved in the healing movement, because when I was 14, I saw this amazing English healer, I don't know if you've heard of him, Harry Edwards. He was in the Albert Hall giving healing, and he was just healing people in wheelchairs, and they walked off the stage. It was amazing. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I've always been into healing. So in 1975, Dr. King published this book saying, you too can heal. Everyone can heal. And in England at the time, I remember, the healers there were very snooty, and they used to say, oh no, this is a gift for the chosen few. And he came along and dispelled the myth. And now in the world, I think everybody realizes that they have this power to heal, and it's a wonderful thing. And it's something I really, really love to do, to teach people to.
Well, you just had a healing conference in Detroit in which you you told me, I think before we started, there's 20 women or so that actually became healers.
Exactly, yeah. We sometimes get men too, but there were 20 ladies there, and it was a fantastic workshop, yeah. But can I just tell you another thing that's kind of tied into healing and UFOs, if you're interested in that?
Well, sure.
It's an experience I had in England about, I suppose, 10 years ago. I was on a radio show in Brighton. Do you know Brighton? It's in the south of England. And it was during certain times of the year, we call in the Aetherius Society spiritual pushes. And these are times that were given by the extraterrestrials, where there are times when we're told a spacecraft called Satellite Number 3 comes into orbit of Earth, and its main function is to increase the effectiveness of all spiritual action of any religion or anything at all by a factor of 3,000 times during these periods, 3 to 4 periods every year of about, 4 periods a year of about 4 weeks at a time. Come into orbit. Well, I was doing this radio show during one of these times, one of these spiritual pushes, and I was talking over the area about Satellite Number 3, and I suddenly felt inspired to say to the listeners, why don't we just join in a little healing prayer? You know, Satellite Number 3 is in orbit, and I want you to prove to yourselves that it really does have a tremendous effect. It really increases our healing and our spiritual work. during these times. And I did this little prayer over the air. And the next week, I'm not kidding you, the switchboard was jammed with these miraculous healings. And this made the front page of the local newspaper. It caused so much controversy, Jerry, that they unfortunately closed the show down. But people were being healed. One lady was healed of an illness she'd had for like 20 years, and some people were seeing lights, and amazing things were happening. And this was the, you know, the healing aspect of the...
Well, let's get to this UFO sighting you mentioned. You'd mentioned something a while ago that got my attention. You said that it just happened, or it was fairly recent. What were you talking about?
One recently that was released under the Freedom of Information Act, but in the north of England. But on reading it again, I don't think it was terribly spectacular. It's probably no different from, you know, thousands of others. I was also reading about one you may have heard of.
Now, we talked about you seeing a UFO when you were a little girl in England.
Yeah, actually, it wasn't a little girl. I was probably in my 30s.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry.
But, I saw... late at night, I looked out the window, and I saw some satellites.
So if you're in your 30s, it was last week. So anyway, what were you going to talk about? You mentioned
it, I saw what I thought was a satellite, and I looked at it, and as I thought that, I saw another one kind of blink into existence, and then another one, and then... They proceeded, I was kind of watching these three, like, stars hanging there in the sky. Suddenly they started to blink out. One of them did a zigzag across the sky. It's amazing. And then I watched these for the next 40 minutes doing this, like, it was like an aerial display. I couldn't think, all the time I was thinking, well, this couldn't be a plane, it could be a satellite. You're trying to think what it could be, you know.
Yeah, and well, you've been following some of these sightings from the Freedom of Information Act. Not anything radical yet, huh?
No, nothing very exciting. I honestly think that they're sitting on the real juicy ones, but what can you do? How can you prove that? I don't know.
Well, now, you know, what I'd like to do with you sometime is, since you're an astrologer, is maybe we need to do a show on astrology. People could get involved and, you know, email us their birth signs and whatever you need, and that would be fun to do, maybe.
Oh, that would be real fun. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Maybe. And if it goes over well, we might do it on a regular basis. Who knows?
Well, that would be fantastic.
Well, that's a great idea. We may just follow up on that. Folks, keep checking back.
Absolutely. Astrology can really help people to sort of clarify, you know, their decisions and all sorts of things. Just one thing on the can I just make a point on the proof front, Jerry?
Yes.
Well, you know, I think we're always looking for the next best spectacular sighting. You know, remember those really fantastic Phoenix ones a couple of years ago?
In fact, we're coming up on the anniversary of the Phoenix lights on March 13th, and I'll be in Phoenix doing a broadcast that night.
Oh, really? Oh, gosh, that's fantastic. No, I was just thinking...
It happened in 1997. There's still lights going on today, even. I was just in Phoenix 4 months ago, and we were recording an interview out by actually a Native American, and lo and behold, right over between these twin peaks came a flying triangle. First time I've seen anything in 40-some-odd years. And Roberta was there, and Rob Krakowski, who we were interviewing at the time, who said before he went out there, he said, you got to come out here with your camera and your tape recorder, and I'm guarantee you something will happen. We won't have to hang around very long. We were only there about 20 minutes. We got there about 9:30 in the evening, and it was amazing. It just kind of coasted around, and then, well, it was gigantic. And there wasn't... you know, it wasn't the size of a football field, I don't think, but it was much larger than the 30 or 40 feet one. You know, it was a big one.
And you could see that?
Oh, sure.
And could you see lights on it?
Oh, yeah. It had lights. We got it on our website. People can go over there and click on Rob Krakowski. He's picturing the little gallery of researchers and experiencers.
I didn't realize that was your site. Wow.
And we are going back there to do several shows on that Sunday, the anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And in fact, as you know, we'll be at the UFO conference before that. And Saturday morning, A very interesting fellow, Bill Hamilton, wrote a book about the Phoenix Lights, and he's going to drop by, and we're going to talk about it. Bill's an old friend of ours and a UFO researcher. Done a lot of things into Area 51.
So what did you feel when you saw it, Jerry? Did you get any feeling from it? Or?
I didn't, but they did. The other people around me did. Yeah.
What kind of feeling did they get?
Well, they got a warm feeling.
It felt really good. And
yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. It didn't land anywhere or anything like that.
No. It just flew around. It flies around there all the time, I understand.
Yeah, I think I've heard about that.
Yeah, and in fact, down in South Phoenix, South Mountain, the same thing is happening.
Is it true, do you think, that 50% of Americans believe in UFOs?
Well, that's what we say on our promo.
My question is this, though, Jerry. How many proofs do we need? Because surely, if there's only one proof like the proof you just had, doesn't that prove the subject forever and ever? I mean, you only really need one proof, don't you?
Yeah. Many of the doubters are turned into supporters when they have a sighting.
But isn't the next question then, why are they here? Isn't that the next logical question?
Well, and that's the reason I had you on. Dr. King seems to have an insight on it, and your group, the Aetherius Society, does. That's one of the reasons we had you on tonight, to get a different perspective about it. See, because I admire your work. I think you're great. I'm just kind of a nuts and bolts guy. I'm waiting for it to land and me go knock on the door. But I don't think it's ever going to happen. But it might. I think something's coming up. The sightings are a lot more prevalent.
Yeah, it's good because there was kind of a bit of a bleak period. There seemed to be.
Yeah, but it's going pretty well now. I mean, we do an hour a week on UFO recent sightings.
Oh, fantastic. Of course, you're really doing a lot for the cause. Because I do believe this is something in our teachings. The more people reach out to this space people, then the more likely they are to come closer, you know. It's got to be, like, if we're sitting here ignoring them, then, you know, it's a sort of a karmic factor, too. So you're doing a great job. We also believe in the society that they're not just here sort of watching us or anything like that, but they come for very definite reasons. One is that they clear up radioactivity. And, you know, as you may probably remember with the Chernobyl sighting, there were sightings that were published in Pravda, I think it was, of hundreds of people seeing a UFO hovering over the, I think it was the fourth nuclear reactor,
uh-huh,
where the blast was. And this is one of the things that they do, you know, clear up our mess. Isn't that awful? And they help us in, like, meteorological difficulties, and they, you know, one thing we've been told through our teachings, or some of the things, are some of the ways that they will help if we would hold out our hands to them as a race. They would help us how to, very specifically, they've said, to irrigate and cultivate the deserts, for example, so that they could become as fertile as they were, I think the words were, as they were when the Great Pyramids were there, which is interesting. And they would help us how to grow crops so that there'd be no famine, and it'd help us in our educational systems so that people would be given the experience they need as demanded by their karma, I think is what they said. It would help in hospitals so that things like cancer and AIDS and all that would be things of the past. They would help in geological ways so that earthquakes wouldn't happen again. They would give us, I think they said, an agricultural system which is, I think it was 25,000 times better than the present one. So all we have to do as a race is to take down that sort of notice that says, you know, thou shalt not trespass. But, you know, the problem is, Jerry, and I'm rambling on here, that if they were to land, we know what would happen, right? If they're a society, we have the spiritual side. We're a non-denominational church in that we have people who are Christian, Buddhist, you name it, who come along. Our main focus in our church is to send out spiritual power or send out love to the world. We really believe in that. I mean, Dr. George King said the biggest energy crisis facing us on this earth is the spiritual energy crisis. In other words, the lack of love, you know. And spiritual energy is a very real thing. Love is an energy, actually. Love is the power that heals. And so we send out this love, we have an absent healing service where we send it out to people who are sick, and also we just send it out generally to the world. And So we have a number of services for this purpose. We have a headquarters in Los Angeles, and we have a branch in Michigan, and we have groups all over the country and different places. And if people want to contact me, I can give them the addresses, or they can go to the Aetherius Society's website, which is Aetherius, Aetherius.org. Well, maybe it's just, I suppose, the space message, if you like. I could probably give in a sentence or two.
Well, what is a space message?
Okay, there were lots of different messages, I said over 600, but one of the main ones, the most important ones, I think, is...
And how do we know it's the most important one? It was given more often, or
well, the one that, I suppose, Dr. King kind of built the Aetherius Society on this foundation, and that one is, I know it's one of your beliefs, and that is service to others. And he believed that it's not so much what we believe that counts, but it's what we do for other people, what we do to bring out truth into the world, what we do to help others, that will really make a difference, that will really change the world. You know, it's not so much a time to be an armchair theorist, it's to be a person of action and make it spiritual action, make it action where you're helping others in some way. And that is kind of the main message in these days. It doesn't matter whether, they actually said, if you're a Christian, be a good one. If you're a Buddhist, be a good one. If you're a Hindu, be a good one. In other words, just do what you're doing, but do it really well.
You and Gary had the Book of Power of Prayer. Gary's your husband. You got another book out? You're working on something? I mean, that's not easy. I mean, you know, so, I mean, it's not like a flippant deal like, hey, write me a book. I mean, you know, but you are working on
something. You know, you can write books like that, but with us, it's got to be really from the heart. It's really got to mean something, and it takes a long time to do that.
Yeah, I have a friend in England, Tony Glenn, and he was here in this little town of Muskogee, Oklahoma, visiting me about 4 or 5 months ago. He was a reporter of quite renowned fame at one time, worked for the Manchester Guardian, and he writes westerns of all things under a pen name. And he said, so I took him around, showed him some of the cowboy stuff around here in Oklahoma, and he went back and he wrote a western novel about it in 2.5 weeks. And I said, can I advertise that for you or promote it? And he says, no, they'll string me up by heels down there because it's not really factual. Turn it over in your mind and do some research before you write yours. So I understand that. There's a lot of difference between pulp fiction and a book like The Power of Prayer.
But hey, it's still hot. Good to do something in 2.5 weeks. That's really a fertile mind. Yeah.
Oh, well, he's going to, well, you know, he's a newsman. He used to write all the time.
Yes.
Writing, you know, that's probably one thing I thought I'd do really well. And it's not as easy as it appears. You know, you got to, and especially if you start polishing it up. Then you never know when to stop. I guess that's the best thing to do. Is the reason they have deadlines from publishers.
I think it was said that Tolstoy rewrote War and Peace 100 times. And remember, in those days,
computers,
it was all done by hand. So yeah, we have to keep writing it and rewriting it, don't we?
Yeah, we're doing a feature on H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds coming up here because the movie's coming out in June. It seems to me that book always, that movie always comes out, or a TV show or a radio show about it just before things get really bad. So I hope that's not a precursor.
The Day the Earth Stood Still. Now there's a good movie.
Yes, it was. Yeah, and the Army did shoot him.
I'm sorry?
The Army did shoot him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were talking about what happens when they land.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to do a show here on astrology, maybe once a month or something. Put it on the website so they can hear it anytime they want to. So what would I do? I would send you my birth date and time, I guess, when I was born.
I need birth date, time, and place.
And where? That's important.
Where? Yeah, that's those three pieces of information are important.
Yeah, well, what we'll do is we'll put out a phone number, and they can do actually the initial thing by email, and let us know the date, time, and place, and what they want to know.
Absolutely, yeah, I could do that. You know, it would just be a obviously I can't go in depth, but...
Now, do you take astrology clients?
I do indeed, yes, Jerry.
So, you know, Reagan had an astrologer in the White House, who knows? Maybe you'll be the next one.
What, for George Bush? I don't think so.
You and I agree on that. Yeah, and we'll see how it works, and when you want...
That would be great. Appreciate okay. that, and that would be great fun. You know, people could always phone in and give me their birth date, and I can work something out really quickly with using numerology, which is, I did a, like a three-hour show in England with that. It was kind of really quite good.
Okay. ChrissyBlaze@MSN.com. Or then send it to me at Jerry@JerryPippin.com, and I'll get it to you. And we'll start promoting that in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so that would be great. Thank
Those you. Things are very popular. Well, we'll see what happens. Now, wait a minute. You can't go yet. I just don't you have a bookstore now or something?
Oh, yes, I have a bookstore.
I mean, how could we not mention that?
Oh, yes.
Now, you can't find it down there at Hollywood and Highland, but you can find it in cyberspace,
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. It's called Starbooks, and it has 32,000 books. Music.
I love that name. Say that again.
Starbooks. Yeah, they can find that on my website. And I have your radio shows on my website.
I know, I saw that.
Yeah, so they can go to ChrissyBlaze.com.
That's what gave me the idea we need to do
Wonderful.
Something like
Thank
that.
You
Why not?
Much.
And we talked, our first conversation, I think, was about the Aetherius Society and UFOs. And I don't know if you realize that, but it's been almost 4 years.
Really? Gosh.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Really?
Okay, so they can find this. So do you have a little search engine or something to find the books, or how does that work?
Absolutely. There's a search engine. It's categories. It's all actually metaphysical, mind, body, spirit. I think there's UFOs. There's all those kind of books only. So, but there's a you can search in the different categories, and you can listen to the music and all that. And it has some great music, actually.
Great. Well, maybe I'll get you to suggest some of our music for our astrology show.
Oh, yes. That's great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
We'll have fun. And we'll get back to this more serious things, too, as well, Reverend Braze. thanks very much for a nice, enjoyable
well, thank you
hour.
So much, Jerry. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And
one thing before you go. Dr. King, he came to Los Angeles, didn't he, to move and live finally? Didn't he leave England?
Yes, he came to America in the 60s, and then he lived in Los Angeles for until he passed away in 1990.
And you came to L.A. What's the attraction for the Aetherius Society in Los
well,
Angeles?
Well, one of the reasons is because we're there on the fault line, you know, spiritual energy. It kind of helps to bring balance to an area, too.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Now, if it'll help you a little bit, I took geology at San Francisco State, so I know all about the San Andreas Fault. Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't major in it. I just took a class.
An official geologist.
No, not really. But I don't know. It was just something I was interested in. And so, and you talk about UFOs, there is a connection with earthquakes and fault lines and sightings.
Really? Really? That's interesting. I'd love to
yeah,
hear
we,
more.
Yeah, go over to our website, and there's a thing there called Messages from Space with a guy by the name of Wes Bateman, and he's quite a mathematician. And go over to his picture, and you click it on, and we just did an interview. We can really do another one here while I'm out in Nevada and Arizona. He lives out in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere. But we're going to go by and do another interview. And he's got it figured out where it's about a 6,000 differential. And he's got it figured out where the flap, which they call UFO sightings, and an earthquake, and then it happens within a certain amount of time. And he has a regular history of it that he's been keeping records since the 60s.
What is his conclusion?
His conclusion is that they're showing up where earthquakes are. He doesn't know why exactly. He has some ideas. Right, and you'll have to listen to the interview. But it's basically that.
Very interesting. Yeah. Very
George Filer this week on Filer's Files. We have a fellow that called Spyman that has some. He keeps records of cameras at Mount Poco down in Mexico where these flying saucers come in and out of this volcano, which is fairly active. And Filer said, I was spying, man, and I was down here, but I'm not. We just feature this week the fellow talking about that with all the pictures. We have lots of pictures of UFOs near earthquakes and volcanoes. Okay, well, Chrissy, is there anything we can plug besides the bookstore? It's there, and it's displayed prominently.
Yes, it is. Perhaps I can give out the Aetherius Society's 1-800 number. It's
1-800-813-54.
1-800-813-54. Yes, that's it. Well, thank you so much.
Stay in touch, and we'll work on this thing about the astrology show as soon as I get back from my tour of the desert.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Good night.